Hey, what's up? This is Sully from Godsmack. Strap on those boots, baby, because you are now in the trenches of the war room with the one and only Mistress Carrie right here on the Mistress Carrie podcast.
What's up? This is Joe Rogan, and you're listening to Mistress Carrie.
Her hair is so lovely. Pretty eyes.
Hey, this is Brent from Shinedown, and you're listening to Mistress Carrie. Hey, Carrie, go put your bra on, girl.
Hey, this is Steven Tyler, and you'll be listening to the baddest bitch in Boston, Mistress Carrie.
What's up? This is Aaron from Stain, and you're listening to Mistress Carrie.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, and you're listening to the one, the only, Mistress Carrie.
Hey, this is David from the band Disturbed, and you're listening to the baddest bitch in Boston, Mistress Carrie.
Hi, Bruce Dickinson here from Iron Maiden. Yes, indeed, Miss Whiplash herself, Mrs. Carrie, is here to unchain your brain.
Hi, this is Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You're listening to Mistress Carrie.
This is Dennis Leary. You are listening to my favorite, Mistress Carrie.
Hey, this is Corey from Stone Sour, and you're listening to, you have the privilege of listening to Mistress Carrie.
Hey, it's Mistress Carrie, reporting for duty from MCHQ for episode 200 of the Mistress Carrie podcast. And before we get to this week's guest, Hardy, first of all, I want to thank everybody that has been there since the beginning with the launch of the Mistress Carrie podcast back in 2020. And to celebrate, not only are you getting this episode, but later on today, I'll be releasing a bonus episode featuring Joe Satriani and Steve Vai. I also want to remind you that you can go to MistressCarrie.com to find all the episodes of the Mistress Carrie podcast and every episode of my weekly video show, Cocktails in the War Room, which streams every Tuesday night at 8:30 Eastern, live on my official Facebook page, YouTube channel, and Instagram. You can also check out my blog, stay up to date with all the rock shows coming through New England in the concert calendar, get details on the Mistress Carrie radio show, send me a message right here in the studio, and even shop in the online Mistress Carrie store. Get all that and more at MistressCarrie.com. This week on episode 200, one of the hardest working men in show business, the one and only Hardy, who has gone from a country superstar to an unlikely rock star. And as Hardy heads out on the Quit Tour this summer with two stops in New England, June 21st at the Xfinity Center in Mansfield, Massachusetts, and June 22nd at the Bank of New Hampshire Pavilion in Guilford, New Hampshire. He's also putting the finishing touches on a brand new album that should be out this summer. I couldn't wait to talk to Hardy about the hilarious video for his latest single, Rockstar, the rock music that he listened to growing up, what it's like to be a songwriter in Nashville, his experience as a baseball fan playing live at Fenway Park, and so much more. I've been trying to get Hardy on the show for a while now, and I could not be happier that he's my guest on episode 200. So, allow me to introduce you to Hardy. Mr. Hardy, one of the busiest men in music, thank you for taking the time out of what I know is an insane schedule to do the show.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
How are you handling what has been like the last 12 months? I feel like you are literally everywhere.
I mean, I feel like I've literally been everywhere. It's been a crazy year. It's been really good. I'm just trying to be, you know, thankful for every step and everything, every great thing that's happened in the past year. But it's been a really crazy year. I'm blessed. I'm just along for the ride.
White knuckling sanity, I'm sure, especially with the new song Rockstar that I've been playing everywhere.
Thank you very much. I'm proud of that one. I really love that one.
It's a good thing that the guys in Nickelback won that lawsuit.
Wait, which lawsuit?
The guys in Nickelback got sued by a guy that said they ripped off the rock star
idea. That's right. Yes, you're right. And actually, I was just with them, and they just told me about that. You're right, or else I'd be next in line, I guess.
Yeah, aren't you guys doing a thing together on CMT on April 6th?
Yeah, we are. It's called Crossroads, and it's just like when a country artist does the, you know, they like, basically it's not mashups, but they sing each other's songs with like a, you know, different genre artist. And we did, it's going to be, I guess, April 6th, you said, that sounds right. it went really well though. I mean, we've already filmed it, so I'm excited for people to see it. It's going to be really great.
speaking to the guys from Nickelback, in rock radio, obviously go way back with the guys at Nickelback. And I have an old picture of me at a Halloween party that the radio station threw when Nickelback was out touring on their first record. And I was backstage interviewing Chad Kroeger and my feet hurt. And I took my shoes off and he rubbed my feet during the interview. The picture's been up on Facebook for like decades, right? For some reason, it ended up in weird foot fetish land on the internet this week.
Oh my God. This week?
Yes. All of a sudden I started getting flooded with these notifications. And it's because me and this old picture of Chad Kroeger from Nickelback is now in like foot fetish land on the interwebs.
You know, everybody's got their thing. I guess just let them enjoy it, you know?
I guess, whatever. Yeah. We got to talk about the video because you had so many costume changes and so many iconic looks. Obviously, everybody from the Beatles and Kurt Cobain to Fred Durst. Were there rock stars that you filmed that didn't make the cut in the video?
That's a great question. No, there was none that we filmed, but we had Lynyrd Skynyrd. We had to cut a few before we shot the video just to make time, but it was Lynyrd Skynyrd. There was one more that I can't think of, and I was actually going to dress up as Gwen Stefani from the why am I blanking on the album? The iconic one with the apple.
Tragic Kingdom. It's an orange.
Yeah, Tragic Kingdom. Yeah. I had a dress. I tried it on and everything, but we ended up having to cut it because I couldn't decide between the other ones and I don't know, maybe next time. But there were a couple that we had outfits for and everything. We just basically knew that we weren't going to have time to do them all. So those were the first two off the list.
You talk about Gwen Stefani, you talk about Lynyrd Skynyrd, artists that back in the day or more recently have found a way to cross over into country, back into rock. Obviously, the guys in Skynyrd, the Southern rock icons that they are.
Right.
You have been in the country world for a while, and then all of a sudden, you're a rock star now. Rock has claimed you.
That's amazing. I never would have thought, I don't know. It's when I started my country career, a lot of my stuff had a rock edge to it. And I had written rock songs like pretty much just for fun back in the day. And, it's just really cool to be accepted. And I feel like I'm really coming into my own and I will always be a country artist. And that's, you know, country is what raised me, I guess you would say, and seasoned me as a professional music maker. But it's just really cool to be in this format. And this is like, I grew up, I tell everybody this, but I grew up in a small town and I grew up country, but I did not even listen to country. I know how to speak the language, you know, like I'm that part of me is very authentic, but when it comes to like my musical taste, I didn't listen to any country until I was like 18 or 19 years old, but my heart beats for rock and roll. So it's amazing to be in this format. It's the coolest thing ever.
That's one of the questions I always ask artists. I have a theory, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have a theory about music. Growing up, there's the soundtrack to your childhood, the music you get unwillingly exposed to from your older brother, your cool uncle, your parents. And then there's a moment where you hear something, a song, an artist, an album, and you make the decision that you like that. And from then on, your musical identity is different. So what was the soundtrack to your childhood? And then what was that song or artist or album where you said, okay, hold on, I like that?
That's a great theory. That's really good. So the soundtrack to my childhood was like anything under the umbrella of classic rock, pretty much. That was all my dad. I give all that to my dad, but it was ZZ Top, Eagle. It was all of it. It was every bit of it. Maybe the only thing that he was not into as much was like late 80s hair rock and roll. But I still love all that stuff anyway. But it was just anything under the umbrella. It was tons of Zeppelin, tons of Pink Floyd. And then, man, you know, I was born in like 90. So I would say the first thing that I, gosh, I, it's between Come Clean by Puddle of Mud or Hybrid Theory, Linkin Park. It's probably those were the two records that I like wore out, and like I begged my parents to buy me both of those, and they did, you know, back when it was a CD, and that kind of that was a shift where I was like, okay, I've discovered my own favorite type of music, or just in general, just developed my own taste. But it was one of those two.
And Linkin Park, obviously famous for straddling genres as well. It's hard to believe Hybrid Theory is almost 25 years old. Those guys are going to be eligible for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame pretty soon.
That's crazy. So that came out in 99, right?
I thought it was 2000.
Maybe it's 2000. I do know that I think it sold, is it 30 million or was it 80 million record? It was something insane. It was like, I saw it the other day. I was like, holy cow, I had no idea it sold that many records. But
it comes up all the time as like one of the greatest debut rock albums of all time. You look at Appetite for Destruction. You look at Jagged Little Pill, Hybrid Theory. Yeah. These records that just came out, Evanescence, Fallen, and they're just like,
yeah.
Talk about starting at the top.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's crazy. But honestly, I mean, that record, every single song on that record is awesome. I can still sing every one of them right now. I mean, I have such a respect for bands or artists that did something that literally nobody had ever done before. It takes so much courage and like patience and creativity and all that together, but to take your influences and then mold that into something that doesn't sound like any of your influences, if that makes sense. Like, it's just this, it's the ultimate form of creativity to do something nobody has ever done before. And Linkin Park definitely did that.
Well, you dressed up as a lot of those icons in the Rockstar video. You got the Beatles in there. You got Nirvana in there.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Nirvana is definitely on that list too. I always like to think about in the past, like who were the ones that did it. And I had a list going at some point of like, even like Jimi Hendrix and the way he played guitar, you know, like, I know that sounds cliche, but I mean, he created a new way to play guitar. I don't know. It's that's just the coolest thing in the world to me.
Yeah. There are certain guitar players that change the instrument. Hendrix, Eddie Van Halen. It's like there was them and after them, and it's different.
Yep. 100%.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Speaking of guitar, I asked Wolfgang Van Halen this. Is musical ability genetic or learned? He thinks that maybe it's both, that obviously he's got the genes, but he also plays his ass off and has since he was nine. So subscribing to the 10,000-hour rule, does musical ability run in your family?
Yes, it does. My mom plays the piano, but prior to my mom, no, I actually I have like a great grandfather or something like that that was a musician that my parents told me about. But other than that, I mean, my mom played piano, but yeah, I'm going to say yes. I don't know. I wish that there was a scientific way to prove that like music ability was like truly genetic. Cause I do think that it's a thing. I know songwriters in Nashville whose children are now like 21, 22 years old. And they're like starting to sign publishing deals because they're really great songwriters. And there's gotta be something, there's something to that, but that's an interesting, somebody should do a study on that and actually see if music ability is in your actual DNA. That'd be a great idea.
I almost feel like you'd have to have twins separated at birth to be the scientific kind of control group to prove it.
Because you know how they can like look in your DNA and like find like people that are like prone to like diseases or certain things. You know what I mean? Now, like they can do that. I wonder if there's like I don't know. That's beyond me. But there's that. I would bet a lot of money. But considering how old music is, you know what I mean? That there's something to that. That's cool.
Yeah, well, I didn't get that gene because my tragic musical career ended with the clarinet and the high school band, and it never recovered.
Well, at least you got to work in music. That's, you know.
Well, that's the thing is that I'm surrounded by these people that I'm so envious of. And that's why I'm always asking these craft questions about when they started playing and when they realized they could write songs. So when did you realize that you had musical ability? How old were you?
I was kind of a late bloomer. I got a guitar when I was like in the eighth grade and I learned like power chords and stuff, but I kind of put it down for a long time and then didn't really pick it back up until I was like 18. And I started like writing songs when I was like 18 and playing guitar and stuff like that. So I would really say that's when it began for me.
There's a total difference too between musical ability and songwriting ability. It's like totally different muscles. You can look at Elton John and Bernie Taupin. Those are two completely different skill sets, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's like two different parts of your brain even. There's something that songwriters have, especially like the best ones, that they like musicianship, not all the time, but I think a lot of the time is like very technical, and you can have that thing and then practice at it and be really like nobody in the history ever has ever picked up a guitar and just like shredded the first time. But there's something about songwriters that they just have an innate ability to tell a story. And it could very well be the first song they ever write. Not everybody's like that, but I just think that the songwriting thing is like a voice that is within you that you just are born with, and you just have this way of speaking or singing or telling a story. And I think musicianship is a little more technical. I could be wrong about that, but
do you remember the first song you wrote?
Yes.
What was it called?
It was called Caroline. And it was a story about, I can't remember. I met this girl at the grocery store and like got her number, and she was from out of town. So I like went to her hometown or whatever and chased her down. It was cheesy, but you know,
I have
gotta start somewhere. I'm not one of those people that wrote a great song the first time I ever wrote a song.
I have long said that rock and roll wouldn't exist if women weren't bitches, because you guys just can't stop writing songs about us.
Dude, there's something to it, man. There's something to it.
And I don't know who Caroline is, but there's certain girls that get all the songs. There's a ton of songs about Jane. There's a ton of songs about Caroline. Oh, there's only a couple about Carrie, though.
What's a Carrie song?
Well, I was named after Hey Carrie Ann by the Hollies.
Okay.
And then Europe's biggest hit ever was not The Final Countdown. It's Carrie, their highest charting hit ever.
Okay. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Those are the only two I know of.
You could cheat and say Carry On My Wayward Son.
Different spelling, though. That one's a different spelling. When it comes to songwriting, especially recently, the topic of Nashville comes up all the time. I did not grow up with a love of country music. So for me, you know, the girl in the suburbs of Boston that grew up listening to rock and metal, my idea of Nashville was belt buckles, boots, and giant hats. That's what I thought it was like. And then a couple years ago, I went down there and I was like, yeah, no, that's not what Nashville is at all. And the more people that I talk to in rock, the more I realize more rock music is probably getting made in Nashville at this point than country music. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, Nashville's songwriting scene is unbelievable. I mean, people here can do, I've written all of my rock stuff with Nashville country songwriters. And it's just, it's crazy. It kind of goes back to what I was saying, but they just, for some reason, this town has it's like a magnet of just really, and there's so many talented people outside of this town, you know, rock artists and writers and all that. But man, I tip my hat to the Nashville writing game because people just know how to write a song here. And it's really special. And I mean, it's just crazy. Like I hear, if it's not a rock, you know, it could be a country song or just a song in general that could kind of transcend genres, but I hear songs that I'm just like, God, the talent, like there's just so many good songs that may never get cut and you never hear on the radio, but there's so many good songs coming out of Nashville. It's really, really cool to be immersed into that world of just really, really creative people. And it's funny that you said that. I've always said cowboys and rednecks are two different things. And, cause a lot of people think of country music as that, you know, the rodeo crowd and like the, you know, Woody from Toy Story kind of vibes. And it's different. It's for a long time it was cowboy hats and stuff like that, but it's changed now. There's all walks of life in country now.
Not all of us up here were in The Departed, which is what everybody thinks about Boston.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Jelly Roll's been a longtime friend on the show, and he talked about going into these like lunch songwriting meetings and like with total strangers and you just bring an idea in there. I talked to Zach Malloy as well from the Nixons, who produces a lot of rock music in Nashville, and the concept of like going into a room with some other people you've never met and having 3 hours booked on your calendar to just write a song. Is there one of your songs that was hugely successful that you wrote with people you never met before?
Oh, like a first timer.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
You're looking for anybody that's just listening. You're turning around.
I literally can't.
And you're looking at the platinum albums on your wall. That is such a rock star move right now.
I don't think so. I don't think that there was. There's got to be one. There's got to be like a. I can't. I don't know. I can't think about that. But I will say one that was early, like if I had probably written with these people maybe once or twice, was God's Country by Blake Shelton. That was like they're now, the two guys are like great friends of mine, but at the time it was like early on. But there is something about the it's hard because you have to like, to in order to be creative, you can't have any like inhibition, you know, and it's hard when you're in a room with two other people. If you know, you have a creative, like a vision and to tell, to first of all, like to just lay your creativity out there and like, I don't know, like, and expect and not be insecure about it. Like, that's a hard thing to do, is just to say, this is what it should sound like. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm new here, but like, blah, you know what I mean? But also to work together and to even have to tell people like, no, I don't like that, or I don't think that's the right way to do it. And with somebody you never met, you know, most of the world are pretty nice, you know, somewhat passive people. And that's kind of a hard thing to do, is to just look at somebody you've never met and say, I don't think that's good enough. But
that's horrifying, it's all part to of me.
It. Yeah, it kind of is to me, too. And you learn, you know, and a big part of that, too, is finding your crew of 10, 20, even 30. You know, there's 400 or 500 signed songwriters in Nashville, and just finding your little crew of people and getting comfortable with them to the point where you can say, that's not it. And also having thick skin and being comfortable with somebody telling you that too.
Not to quote a couple of massholes, but Ben Affleck and Matt Damon talked about their writing relationship. And Ben Affleck said this really prolific quote that I think fits what you're talking about. Don't judge me by my bad ideas. Judge me by my good ones.
Yeah, that's cool. There's a lot of bad. I mean, I've written, I don't know, since I've been here, 1,000 songs, probably more than that. Honestly, way more than that. And, you know, just a small handful have been hits or have been good ideas. So there's a lot of bad ones and there's just a handful of good ones.
Do you get ideas while you're sleeping? Do you have notebooks all over the house? Are you putting them in your phone? How do you keep track of your ideas?
They're all in my phone. And yes, I've written a few songs that I like, ideas that I had while I was like drifting into sleep. Like it's happened more times than you would think. And I have to convince myself, like in this blissful moment, like to wake up and write it down because I'm not going to remember it the next day. And I've done it like a lot. And that happens a lot for some reason. It's like that and first thing when you wake up in the morning, both of those. And you like I've written what I did something recently where I had to get out of the shower and like write something down on like the counter, like with a pencil. I can't remember or something just to remember something I said until I could get to my phone. And then I like, you know, later looked at it and actually wrote it down. But it's crazy how things will come to you and you're like, I'm going to forget this, you know, like, if you're like me, you have a terrible memory and like you'll a melody or whatever it is and you'll forget it. It's like, you got to get it. You got to write it down quick. So it lives forever.
You alluded to it earlier, but I ask every songwriter on the show this question. Is there a song that you think is perfectly crafted? It's not a favorite song question. It's a craft question that you covet and wish that you wrote it and then break it down from a songwriter's perspective as to why you think it's so brilliantly written. Doesn't matter the artist or the genre of music, but just a song that you go, that is a perfect example of songwriting.
Yes. I can't even like pick one. Hurt is one for me.
Nine Inch Nails Hurt?
Yeah. I just think that, and I think a lot of that is the delivery, which is gets into more of the performance. I would say Landslide is up there for me. I need to like pull up the lyric, but it just, there are certain words and phrases that perfectly encapsulate an emotion. And to me that makes a song perfect. If you want to get into like country songs, there's a bunch. There's a song by Tim McGraw called Humble and Kind that was written by Laurie McKenna. It was a solo write, and it's a song to, it's advice to, it's the song is like you're giving advice to your child, and the hook is like always be humble and kind. And it just touches every single category of life. And there's one that's like, there's one line in there that says, know the difference between sleeping with someone and sleeping with someone you love. I love you ain't no pickup line. Always be humble and kind. It's like, there's just some stuff. And like, to me, that's a perfect song. And when it comes down to country, there's a bunch, but to me, Landslide, when people say like, what's the perfect song? Landslide always sticks out to me for some reason and Hurt, but for two very different reasons.
It's not very often that artists pick the same song, and there's only been one other artist on the show that picked Nine Inch Nails Hurt, and it was Jonathan Davis from Korn. For the same...
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, for the same reason.
I'll gladly be in that category with him. That's awesome.
And we also cited that it's so good that Johnny Cash wanted to cover it.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, how did Johnny Cash even hear that song? Did Johnny Cash listen to Nine Inch Nails
in the 90s? But somebody obviously... Oh, you know who I think brought it to him was the producer, Rick Rubin. Didn't Rick Rubin produce that record?
Really? Probably.
Yeah, wow. I think Rick Rubin brought it to him. And that's Rusty cool. Cage from Soundgarden, too. He covered that brilliantly as well.
Johnny Cash did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, you got to go and listen to Johnny Cash's Rusty Cage. It's great.
How did I not know that?
Yeah.
All right.
Really, really good. Before I let you go, I got to talk about touring because you're going to be in town a couple of times. You're going to be at the Xfinity Center in Mansfield, Mass on June 21st on the Quit Tour. And then you're going to be at the Bank of New Hampshire Pavilion in Guilford, New Hampshire on June 22nd. Now that you're in the rock world, one of the radio stations I'm on up in Portland, Maine, we did a whole contest giveaway for your tickets for the Bank of New Hampshire Pavilion, and the station is called The Bone, and the contest was The Bone Goes Hard for Hardy. You can't do that in country music.
No, you can't. You can get away with so much more cool shit in rock and roll. That's awesome. No, I'm excited. Both of those venues I've played before as an opener, and it's been a very fast 6 years of my like artist career, and I'm just like blown away and grateful that I'm coming back and like as a headliner now, and it like freaks me out a little bit, you know, but I'm excited. The Guilford place is like special too, because it's just so cool. And the backstage, I'm sure you know about that, but they take care of you. And like, it's like adult summer camp back there. Mention the show is always great. But.
Last summer, Jelly Roll had a rowboat full of lobster in that thing.
Yeah. They do it, man. They do it right up there. But no, I'm excited. And you know, people, you know, obviously I get to say I'm a rock and roll artist now, but so many of my friends and family, you know, when I say like, oh, we have one of the best shows ever, and it was in Connecticut, or it was in, you know, Boston, and people are like, they listen to that stuff up there. And I'm like, yeah, there's country fans everywhere. And now we've got both rock and country. So I'm excited to get back up there. It's going to be great.
Well, the Northeast is famous for its rock passion for sure. I mean, I've been in rock radio up here for decades, and it's like, it's our lifeblood. And once we love you forever. You're never getting rid of us.
That's fine by me. And we're going to give it hell. This is going to be the heaviest, most energetic set that we've ever played. I'm going to be blown out every night. It's a rock and roll show. I mean, it's up there, but I'm so excited. The energy is going to be huge this time around. And we've made a lot of changes to the set. And it's going to be really good.
Before I let you go, you talk about venues you played as an opening act. I just talked to Rick Allen from Def Leppard a few weeks ago about this. Tell me what your Fenway Park experience was like.
Oh, it was crazy. It was one of those moments where it was just such a blur. Like it flew by just because of the adrenaline and just, I can't even describe it. I mean, but standing out there and looking at, and I grew up, I played baseball growing up. When I was a kid, I like randomly was obsessed with like baseball parks, and I knew all the different names of the parks and stuff and Fenway. And so the first time I ever saw Fenway Park was when I walked out on stage too. So it was never like ruined for me like that. It was a crazy first Fenway experience. And I walk out and like, there's the Green Monster. Anyway, it was just, and you know, what was so cool is that it wasn't a pretty day. It was this muggy, like Boston, just like, you know what I mean? Like kind of not rainy, but like cloudy and foggy, but it was perfect. It was like the coolest setting for a show. But it truly flew by. Like I got off stage and somebody was like, dude, my guitar player or drummer was like, dude, we just played Fenway. And I was like, I don't even remember. It was awesome. But then we played it two nights. So the second night I soaked it in, I took it in a little bit more, you know, but it was incredible. It was such a cool experience.
I mean, growing up here, you know, we become not jaded to it, but used to it. And whenever I have friends come in from out of town, they're like, oh, can we get tickets to go to a game at Fenway, or can we go take a tour? And it really does feel like you're walking onto a movie set. It almost doesn't look real.
Yeah. And I hope it never goes away. It's the most iconic. It's like Fenway and Wrigley are the two most iconic baseball fields of all time. And I hope they never go away.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I mean, they had talked about it years ago, but when I was growing up, the idea that they would have concerts there was not something that anyone would have ever believed.
Really?
And then they had like Neil Diamond, and then like they were like, oh, maybe we'll have Paul McCartney and the Rolling Stones. We never thought they would have like rock bands, like young rock bands in family friendly Fenway, and now they are, and it's like,
right,
okay, here we go.
I love it. I'm here for it.
Well, we can't wait to get you back in New England. Rockstar obviously is out everywhere. Does that mean there's a whole new album coming, or what's going on?
Yeah, the album is coming this summer.
That's all you'll tell me?
I mean, it's I just finished it today. Today was the last day I sang on the rest of the vocals, but No, I can't say too much, but I have some of the, it's like the most heat that I've ever brought, especially from rock and roll. There's like every song on there is special in its own way. And there's a handful of songs that I think are going to be so big, and they're just so different for me, but it just works. And I cannot wait for people to hear it. And it's coming soon. A lot of it is going to come out. A handful of songs are going to come out before the Quit Tour starts, which I think is in, I think May 30th or 31st. So you'll get a bunch of it before, or I would say, you know, three or four more songs before the actual record comes out. But the record's coming out this summer.
Somebody got to you and told you I can't keep a secret, didn't they?
I try to keep my cards close. You know, you never know.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll see you this summer. It was so nice to meet you.
Kerry, thank you so much.
There he is, the one and only Hardy. The Quit Tour coming to New England for two shows coming up in June. Want more details on the show and the links to get tickets? Just click the links in the show notes of this episode. While you're there, you'll also find all of Hardy's links, all the Mistress Carrie links, and the link to this episode's corresponding playlist. I make a playlist for every full-length episode of the Mistress Carrie podcast that features all of my guest music and all the artists and songs that we referenced in the interview. If you liked what you heard, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to the Mistress Carrie podcast. New full-length episodes come out every Wednesday. Plus, every weekday, you get the Sit Rep. All of your rock news, music headlines, and entertainment updates in around 5 minutes. And you never know when we're going to release a bonus episode. Like later on today, Joe Satriani and Steve Vai are coming up to help me celebrate 200 episodes. Join me live every Tuesday night at 8:30 Eastern for my weekly video show, Cocktails in the War Room. And you can always find me on the radio. Get the details on all of that and more at MistressCarrie.com. The Mistress Carrie Podcast, a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.